You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 289th edition of Assembly Call Radio and our 943rd episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of May 4th, 2023. I'm your host, Andy Bottoms. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Smart takes a shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
Well, that's for this week's banner moment. Not a lot to pick from, because there's not a lot of news in the IU basketball world. I guess I would say personally, banner moment was my younger daughter had a solo in her sixth grade chorus concert tonight and did a good job. So that'll be my personal banner moment. I mean, from an IU perspective, really, you look at the addition of Anthony Walker. Thought, you know, Jared and Coach handled that well in the emergency pod. Coach live and on location from his car. For that one, that's the level of dedication that that he has to the program. But you know, I think a good depth piece, not a guy who's going to push this team over the top by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think it's a guy that you can call on if you need some additional depth in the front court. Especially, we've talked about Renew's foul issues as a freshman. Hopefully that's something he outgrows as a sophomore, but if not, I think you feel good about being able to have a experienced guy like Walker as the backup. And the other piece of news, really, from a scheduling perspective, which dovetails well into one of the topics that we're going to hit on tonight, that was the report that IU is going to play Auburn in December in Atlanta. I think, you know, we talk about this a lot, trying to figure out how you get better games, how you get games on the schedule that aren't going to hurt you and really give you chances to beat other power conference teams. This one on a neutral site, that always helps. And I think Atlanta, given some of the inroads that IU's had recently there from a recruiting standpoint, I think it makes a lot of sense. And so still a lot of pieces left to fall as you put the schedule together, but I think that's a good one for IU to be able to look forward to as we move into the rest of the offseason. With that, let me introduce my co-host this week. Jared and Ryan are both off, but here with me, he's a longtime high school basketball coach in the state of Indiana, founder of Delphi Bracketology, and Hoosier Nation's most famous porch dancer.
He remembers the days when a movie cost a dollar. Heaven help you if you ever decide to pop your collar. Play hard, but remember, fake hustle is a crime. He's the coach and it's Tonsoni time.
All right, Coach, what's on your mind this week?
Well, a pretty slow week of news, but still moving in the right direction. The roster is getting closer to be completed. I think we emphasized on that emergency pod that this was a depth piece. Anytime you're going to bring in five transfers, they're either all five going to start or some of them will have to be backups. I thought Indiana was hit hardest in numbers in the post. Obviously, the shooting and the scoring from the wing has been a need of Indiana basketball for a while. And those last two spots, it looks like with the names that are popping up and the contact that's being made and the young man that's supposedly visiting this weekend, that you're going to get a wing or two in the last two spots. So just trying to be patient there. Really happy with the Auburn schedule game. You know, interesting, we'll have Rocco Miller on here in the second part, and he knows a lot and reports out a lot about games as they're being scheduled, and also a well-known bracketologist. But as you and I know, that you got to play people in the non-conference. You got to have some level of success. But even playing people and getting beat helps. As we saw, Indiana did not play well against Kansas or Arizona score-wise, but was able to get a four seed, and part of that was you challenged yourself, and you got the Emerald games or whatever that's called in New York City, where you're going to
Empire,
get Empire.
There
Classic.
Is an Emerald something else, so I don't want to.
Yeah, I think it's out west, right?
Someplace in I'm not sure. I was going to say Florida, so one of us is bound to be right.
Those games, I mentioned quickly, we didn't talk a lot about it on that emergency podcast, but that's what Indiana basketball needs to do. They need to schedule at least, I think, five or six of these really top-notch games, and then some of the five or six you have remaining in the non-conference still need to challenge with that mid-level type of game to get ready for what is a gruesome Big Ten, even in years that the Big Ten is down. So I really was pleased to see that. That's at least four games against Power Five schools. Got to replace that ACC Big Ten challenge. There's a good question coming up later on that. Wrapping up the spring, get these guys home for a little bit and then get them back on campus to get their workouts going and build for next year. But the news has been, Andy, coming rather regular for the most part, maybe not as fast as we all want to fill all those positions quickly with the guys we want right off the bat. But I think we've had a slow trickle of news, which has kept us going. This is the first week that it's kind of slowed down a little bit. But, feeling pretty good, actually, about Indiana basketball.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this week coming up, we said we'll do some Hoosier headlines, a couple of which we've already touched on. And then segment two, we got Rocco Miller coming on. We may bring him on earlier as well, but a great bracketologist, a guy who's been on some of the Fielding the 68 episodes with me over the last couple seasons, and also a guy who's really into the scheduling. So I wanted to talk with him. Felt like it was a good time to talk a little bit about scheduling and some of the philosophies out there and how that impacts bracketology. And then we've got a mailbag that we'll hit in segment three, as we always do. So all of that is coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio. But now let's talk about our presenting sponsor.
Home Field Apparel, wear one for the team.
And this edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison and so many more. Bottom line is that Homefield has something unique for fans and grads of pretty much every school, with unique vintage logos for all of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it'll be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through the Kelley School of Business. And what could be better than that? And as we get close to whether it be Mother's Day, graduation season, Father's Day, great time to look on Home Field Apparel. They're coming out with refreshes for a bunch of schools. I know we have neighbors who have three boys who graduated high school in the last few years, the last of which is coming up this year. And our go-to gift for them for each of the first two has been Home Field shirts for wherever they're going. Their mom texted the other day, asked my wife where we had gotten the shirts, because they intended to do the same thing for some other people. And that happened to be the day they had their 30% off flash sale. So it worked out well. Served as a good reminder for me that I needed to buy a shirt for their son that graduates this year. And as one is wont to do, picked up a couple things for myself while I was working for somebody else. So if you want to check them out, you can go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME to get 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME for 15% off. Once again, that website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team.
Yeah, I'm a size 3XL for anyone who, wants to show some appreciation. I'll post my address. Just call Connor. He has my address.
He'll just send it, slip it in with the next shipment that's probably already on its way to your house. So.
Yeah.
All right, so Hoosier headlines. We talked to Anthony Walker a little bit. As I mentioned, Jared and Coach got on, did a good emergency pod that dug a little bit deeper into that. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, would definitely encourage people to go back and do that. On the this year recruiting component, you got Mackenzie Mbako on official visit this weekend. He's visited St. John's in Kansas, so that's really a big one. I know you guys talked a little bit about him, one of those potential wing scorers and shooters that IU really needs. So that becomes a pretty huge visit of being able to try to land him. You've got coaches out at the live high school recruiting events, a number of offers going out to top 75 players. And you had New Palestine's Ian Stevens joining IU as a preferred walk-on. He was an all Hoosier Heritage Conference player last season. Pretty much takes the place of Nathan Childress in terms of being a walk-on, got decent size, athleticism, and a guy who could play at a smaller school but has opted to play at IU. and also played for Jordan Hull's AAU team. So seems like everything you read about him will be a good addition as a preferred walk-on, and it's certainly exciting news for him. So, you know, Coach, any of those, stand out to you? Any of the other recruiting news in particular that particularly has your ear? Probably the Mbako stuff, but even any of the high school guys that they've been out seeing kind of catch your eye at all so far?
Yeah, the Mbako thing is very intriguing to me. Committed to Duke, and then when Filipowski came back, wanted to go elsewhere. You know, Kansas and you put the Dickinson transfer there. Does Mbako see, time, points, minutes where, reading between the lines, not trying to get anyone too excited, but, there's not someone in his way. Ware hasn't been established. X is going to be the point guard. That could be a real good selling point this weekend, that you can come in here and be a featured part of the offense if the staff believes that highly in this young man. He's, a top five recruit, top 10 recruit. Coming out, obviously freshmen have to prove themselves, but we got a lot of good mileage from a highly recruited Jalen Hood-Schifino and Malik Renew. It would be really nice to get this guy who has some face-up game, and that's been my word, Andy, all offseason is face-up game, face-up game. You want your fours to have some face-up game. You don't even mind if your fives have a face-up game in this positionless basketball. You need to be able to shoot. You need to be able to drive. You need to be able to post up a little bit. Do a variety. I think this guy is intriguing. Again, you watch his highlight film. He shoots 99% from three, dunks all the time, and just plays outstanding basketball. But it's the athleticism. Again, we're talking about dudes. We got beat by a Miami roster that was full of athletes, and we need to get there as a program. And I just think overall Coach Woodson is heading that direction. He's just got to finish. It's not a complete class yet. So that sticks out to me. The other thing is the Ian Stevens joining. I know that doesn't get a lot of, notoriety or Twitter, but when you have depth in practice, you can do a lot of things. And this guy could go to some smaller schools, definitely, and play and get on the court during game time, but he's going to come and sacrifice, go through all the weightlifting, all the training. Same thing that Nathan Childress did, and we talked last about him moving on to Indiana Wesleyan, so he gets to play that senior year. That's good. Anytime you can get some size in there to run, he's not going to be, like a starter going up against another type of starter, but it does give you some depth to rest some guys, the old load management, and if people need a practice off, you're not having a drop down to some – GAs and other things who might have to step in, managers who might have to step in, although a lot of those guys do well too in practice. But anytime you get these guys who are willing to sacrifice, they're a big part of any program. So I just want to give Ian a shout out here. Congratulations for selecting Indiana, and we wish you nothing but enjoying your time here at Indiana, and then maybe you play for two or three years, build your game, and go somewhere. That would be awesome for Ian. But those are important part of programs for practice purposes, bench morale, a lot of things like that. And obviously he played for Jordan Hull's AAU team, so he knows what Indiana basketball is all about. But congratulations to that young man and becoming a Hoosier.
Yeah, and you alluded to the other piece of Big Ten news. That's Hunter Dickinson committing to Kansas. Obviously the Big Ten news was not him leaving Michigan, but Maryland was in the mix. From a recruiting standpoint, but decides to go to Kansas. I think if you kind of put aside your thoughts on the overall saga of his recruitment and how that was handled and the whatever the hell that video was that he used to announce his decision today. I think when you look past that from a basketball perspective, it makes a lot of sense. It makes sense for Kansas. It makes sense for him. I think you do look at how that might impact the Mbako decision. It's another mouth to feed. What does that really look like? Somebody ran down their roster, just a loaded roster. And Dickinson was really the kind of piece they didn't have in terms of a true big guy in the middle. They played really small. KJ Adams was fantastic last year, but really undersized. And so this will give them a different look and things like that. But you wonder if that has some lingering impact on the recruitment of Mbako, whether that means it's something good for IU or not. That remains to be seen, but I do think you could, draw some questions there and figure that out. And Dickinson, a guy that has played in Assembly Hall, before and will do so again this season as a member of the Jayhawks in December when they come to Bloomington. So IU fans are not totally rid of him yet in that scenario. But like I said, I think from a basketball perspective, that made as much sense as anywhere for him to go and, you know, kind of put the other stuff aside.
We
need
to teach him a little podcast etiquette. He's had some issues in predicting big wins and then getting blown off the floor. And then his video game needs a little bit more work. His basketball game is really solid, but his off the court game needs a little work there. Yeah. You know, Kansas has just a lot of personnel and maybe that benefits Indiana in that recruitment of Mbako. We'll see. You got him on campus and he's the third visit of his, so maybe we can keep him on campus and get him to sign. That would just be a huge talent upgrade for our Indiana Hoosiers.
Yeah, that would really, I mean, as you look at the roster and what this team needs, that would be go such a long way to fill in that hole. I think that would, I don't know that the fan base will ever be at ease per se, but it would certainly go a long way to making people feel a little bit comfortable with that aspect of things. So we'll see what happens with that recruitment and go from there. But coming up on Assembly Call Radio, we're going to be joined by our special guest, Rocco Miller, who knows as much about college basketball scheduling as anybody. And we'll pick his brain a little bit about that, talk about the implications of that on bracketology. So stick with us here on the Assembly Call.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right.
Hello, everyone. Good to have you.
Jared said he'd be here about, what, 9:15, 9:20, so we can kill a little time here in the
he's
in
here.
The meantime. Oh, is he? Okay. I'm not logged into the Assembly Call account, so I couldn't tell.
Oh, okay. That was on me then. Hi, Rocco.
You know, every once in a while, it like kicks me out, and I just don't bother to figure out what the password is anymore, and I just log in separately, so it's fine. Rocco, what's up, man?
Hey, good to see you. Thanks for having me on.
You too. Happy to do it.
No, my pleasure as well. Don't get to talk about this too often, so we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we hop on, I feel like you alluded to this at some point during our conversations, either before or during fielding the 68. But am I correct in saying that you do some work with schools related to scheduling? Is that
I think that's definitely fair to say. I mean, I try
okay. I didn't want to misrepresent anything, set you up to have an infomercial or anything like that. Do what you need to do. But I just want to make sure I wasn't misrepresenting what I thought I heard. So,
I appreciate that. No, I think it's pretty known at this point. I've probably over the last like 5 years, I'm sure I've reached out to every single school and talked to most of them. So it's, it just like with everything else, it takes years, but it builds and builds over time. So it's been good.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. All right, we'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll probably hit some kind of the bracketology angles since all three of us have that in common. So we'll talk a bit about that and just kind of see where it takes us.
All right, here we go. Segment two, here we go.
What's going on? It's Christian Wofford. What's the only thing better than an epic buzzer beater? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join my guys, Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on the Assembly Call after every IU game. Go Hoosiers.
All right, and welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with the coach, Brian Tonsoni, and a special guest. I'm really excited to welcome in. He's Rocco Miller. He covers college basketball, does bracketology work, has been on the Fielding the 68 shows with me the last couple seasons, and tracks non-conference scheduling over both at his website, racketeer.org, as well as following him on Twitter, is these days filled with a lot of information about whether it's some of the preseason tournaments and events and things like that, but also a lot of other things in the scheduling world. So Rocco, thanks for joining us. I know you've been on the podcast with Alex from Inside the Hall, on Podcast on the Brink, a few times, so probably a familiar voice to some Hoosier fans, but first time here, so we're happy to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate it. It's always good to be on with you and Mr. Brian Tonsani. Good to see you again. And it's to me, like, all of it goes hand in hand, right? Like the as soon as the Final Four is over every year, for me is the start of next year's schedule. I know some of the games are done years in advance, but a lot of the scheduling and strategy, especially in today's net era, as we all know, it's been around for about four seasons total. The analytics that are involved in scheduling are very strategic and well incorporated across all levels of college basketball now. So it's something that I've wanted to be a part of, and anything I can do to add value for programs as they plan their schedule is pretty much why I do it. And then, you know, from a basketball season standpoint, just covering games in person and then doing all the bracketology stuff with you guys and a lot of the same work you do January through March. It to me, it just all comes together over a 12-month cycle every year. So it just makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know we talked about this just briefly during the break. So you work with a number of schools on helping them schedule, understanding the implications of choices they may make from a scheduling standpoint. So I guess just to ground everybody in what that looks like, maybe talk through the process that you go through with them and what the key data points are that you use to try to give them advice and consultation on decisions that they can make.
Yeah. So it obviously varies from league to league. So in the power conference structure, there's probably not a lot of value I can bring unless it's maybe a one or two off neutral game or getting them in the event they want to get into. You know, if you're an IU, for example, Indiana is probably getting courted by every big event every year. In fact, they're probably signed to play events in future years. So the top of the sport from a scheduling standpoint holds all the cards. And then there's a bunch of different tiers below the top of the sport where even middle of the pack Big Ten or bottom of the Big Ten teams, they're basically going to be fighting for either, you know, you could take maybe like a Penn State type approach last year and scramble your way into the Charleston Classic, get three games that way, figure out a couple other maybe neutral games to do or good series. Like I think Penn State for a long time was supposed to have a series with VCU. So the scheduling strategy changes from program to program based on your access to events. And that's kind of where scheduling starts for every program. So even if you're talking to, you know, IUPUI, they're probably starting their process by figuring out what event they want to be in and then how many times they want to get a check, which is what in the industry we call a buy game or a guarantee game. And then they're going to fill in maybe a couple of series locally that makes sense. So when I'm consulting with a program, it could be an IUPUI or it could be a power team or a lot of teams in between, as there are hundreds. And we're trying to figure out what makes sense strategically for those programs. And then since I'm in the conversations with a lot of different events themselves and the neutral site organizers, what I try to do to add value to those conversations is just, you know, make sure we have each other's contact information, send them some teams that make sense for their outline and their strategy. But the reason I get so involved is because I'm passionate about helping the schools that maybe don't have all the opportunities. You know, I happen to live in the Bay Area, so I'm close to San Francisco, St. Mary's, Santa Clara, some very strong mid-major programs around me that are just fighting and scrapping for a chance to play a team like in Indiana on any year. And it's not easy to do. In fact, even a team like Houston last year, nobody wanted to play them, right? So they were part of the American Conference. And so scheduling just got so many different layers of dynamics that, you know, it really takes like a full menu of teams to look at to in a lot of cases to get one to say yes.
Rocco, the mid-major thing is always amazing to me. I understand how the bigger power schools, you say they're already locked into their events and they have some of their conference alignment games. And so then they want to get some buy games in so for their season ticket package and all that. But it's frustrating to me as a pure college fan, not a bracketologist, not an assembly call host, from a pure that we don't see some of these solid mid-majors getting a home game against a big school or even just traveling to a bigger school. Could you just address why that is so difficult? Is that a bracketology concern, a number of victories concern? Is it a money concern? But it just seems like the San Franciscos don't travel to Indiana anymore. Even smaller schools like that have been really good and fun to watch, the Oral Roberts, no one wants to play them because they're good. And then we talk schedule strength come bracketology, and those schools have to fight tooth and nail to get into the tournament. So what's the main issue in that struggle to get those types of games on the college schedule?
Yeah, no, you nailed it on the head. It's a huge frustration for me, too, just observing all this like you guys do, is not getting those games that we would love to see. And I think the number one reason starts with the pressure. If you have a job in the Big Ten, if you have a job in the Big 12 or the SEC or any of the power conferences, the pressure to win is immediate. You know, we can see coaches get fired in a year. And if you're in a league where, you know, maybe going into the year, you're picked eighth or seventh, or maybe you feel like you're last, or maybe you feel like you're, you know, not top three, a lot of those coaches just err on the side of caution. And if they've got 11 spots to fill for non-conference, not to call anybody out, but like Minnesota in your league, they tend to not want to play very many hard games because they know when they play 20 Big Ten teams, there's a good chance they're going to lose a good chunk of them. You know, obviously not to pick on them. They've had good years before, but it really is a season to season thing now, especially with the portal and with all the changing parts of college basketball. It's a year to year sport. And so, you know, there's no scheduling governance nationally. And so with that structure, if you're not forced to play a game, you're not going to play it. And unfortunately, here's where bracketology plays in, fellas. With the net system, you can actually go and play, you know, 8 or 9 guaranteed home games where you're almost guaranteed to win. If you're an amazing scheduler, like Iowa State's really been amazing at this in the last couple of years, where they get almost every, besides their event, they'll play basically every game at home. And they're amazing at finding like the Alabama A&Ms, the North Carolina A&Ts, the, you know, teams from the Southland, Arkansas Pine Bluff, et cetera, to come fill up their schedule, get 9 wins. And then maybe they go 2-1 in their event and they enter Big 12 play at a shiny 11-1. But you and Andy and I will get on podcasts and be like, Iowa State hasn't played anybody yet. I don't know how good they are. But then if they just coast to a 500 Big 12 record, the net system seems to be rewarding them because they'll play 20 quad 1 or 2A games. And that drives me nuts. I think, you know, that's something that the net missed versus RPI, because RPI used to give you a lot of credit for playing on the road. And you do get a little extra credit for playing on the road in the net era, but it really doesn't reward a team in that type of position money-wise that can just go by 8 or 9 wins like that. And so I do think the net, if they want to make it fair and equitable across college basketball, which I do have my doubts, they should reassess kind of a little bit on how that system rewards teams, in my opinion.
Yeah. So one more kind of general question, and then we'll hit a couple of more IU specific things. So you look at a school, as you said, it is a year to year proposition and things change quickly. So we'll use the best example is going to be this year is Florida Atlantic. So no, they come off the season they had, they got most everybody coming back. You know, games that they probably would have been able to get a year ago, they're not going to be able to get now for the same reasons we talked about before, is nobody wants to play them because they're afraid to get beat. What are some of the inner workings of that? I think it's not like college football, obviously, where you got games set out, you know, IU will announce somebody they're playing in 2029, in football. It's not that way in basketball. So how do you, you know, if you're trying to help Florida Atlantic this year, like, how do you pivot from what they probably would have wanted to do before all that success? And how do you pivot into something that still allows them to schedule well enough to be successful again? They're obviously changing conferences. That helps a little bit. But just as a, I guess, a case study, if you will, of how quickly things can change, you know, maybe talk through a little bit of a team like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, for Florida Atlantic, I mean, they were so unbelievably successful in the tournament, as we all know, getting to the Final Four. And you've got your Goodmans and Rothsteins right now putting them in their top 10. And I think a lot of the country has bought into that. So Florida Atlantic's in a very unusual spot, honestly, where they're going to be able to do a lot of things that most teams in their situation can't. They like ESPN went out of their way to make sure they got into the Orlando event. I think that's out in public now. And so they'll get three great games in Orlando. There's a team, I think, from every power conference in that event. We're all familiar with it, the one in Disney World down there at ESPN Events. So that's three games there. They're getting a game in Chicago eventually to play in the Barstool Sports event. Well, they'll play in, I think they'll play an Atlantic 10 team there. The Hall of Fame's having them play an Atlantic 10 team. So I think teams are like, because Florida Atlantic's projected to be top 20, everybody kind of wants to play them. It's weird. Usually that's not the case for a team from their league, because there's like that, you got to look at it as a floor versus ceiling opportunity. And I think everybody's looking at Florida Atlantic's floor as like still really, really high. Like they're still going to be a quad one. So they're just getting some special treatment that I haven't really seen from a team like that. But I'll give you another example, like North Texas, who's also very, very strong, been in the top 50, I think, three straight years now. They're still a team that a lot of power schools are like, there's no way we're playing them. And the power conference teams, the reason they always want to play each other, I think from a coach's job security standpoint, like if you go and lose to North Texas on national TV, the common fan might look at that like in a football point of view and be like, this coach has got to go. Can't beat North Texas. What is this? Right. But those of us basketball guys know that North Texas is probably just as hard as half the power conference teams that are out there, if not harder. And so there's this whole perception side of scheduling that I don't think the public ever really takes into account, or maybe it is kind of a blind spot. But yeah, like I will call around for a team like North Texas all over, you know, the Power Six, and pretty much get predominantly no's from everybody. And so there is, and that's what makes your question an excellent one, because you can imagine if it's North Texas, it's also, you know, teams like UAB, VCU, Drake, you know, a lot of College of Charleston is going to be good next year. That's another good example where there's this perception versus reality thing. They might actually get a quad one, but they won't take the risk.
Yeah.
Is there a solution in your mind doing this that would make sense for a scheduling a game or two for these teams that are really good teams, as you mentioned, that everyone you call says, no, I don't want them in my place, and we're definitely not going to their place. Is there a solution that is on the horizon?
Yeah, I don't know if there's one on the horizon. I have a couple ideas that I still feel very strongly about. So one, if we had I think the easiest solution, Brian, is to have a national scheduling coordinator. The hard part is, as you guys know, the NCAA has basically lost a lot of any kind of authority that they may have used to have in this area, you know, losing court cases, NIL, all that. And now events themselves, you know, even doing like a one-day neutral in Las Vegas will have some NIL opportunities for teams to come out there. That's just become the norm in the last couple of years. And so, you know, everything's got to be attached to that. And I don't know how, you know, some guy sitting in Indianapolis can just make teams play each other. It's just kind of become unrealistic these days, let's be honest. But my idea that I think could really work, and I think as a bracketologist, we would agree this would be amazing. You know, the G League every year, just to bring it back to the pros, and I'm not a big pro basketball guy, but every year around the holidays, they do a four-day showcase in Las Vegas at the Mandalay Bay. The entire thing is televised, and every team comes there and plays two games. You get a game, then you get a day off, then you get a game, then you leave town, and it's full of scouts for the NBA. I think if college basketball, just especially with where everything's going with NIL, especially with teams trying to get more non-conference opportunities later in the year, if we did something like that for 4 days, like at the start of February or late January, and we just took like, you know, we'd need a lot of conferences to buy in, but there's got to be enough motivation to get the Big Ten, the SEC, et cetera, to do something like that. Make the whole thing a scouting event, include some of the best mid-majors, and make little 14 pods where you would have effectively a semifinal, a championship game, and a third place in each pod. And that would just boost up everybody's schedule that went and volunteered to be part of that, and also gave the players, especially prospects, the opportunity to play in front of scouts and be televised. You know, that's kind of my mini idea to try to make a better sport. The one frustrating thing, as somebody that follows mid-majors closer than most, is their entire at-large case is on the line from day one, and it kind of ends at the holidays because they have no more non-conference games. So I would love to, because so many of those teams are stronger by March. We all know that. I want to see how they would do against a Power 5 team at the end of January, early February, in a perfect world.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is I don't even remember how many years ago this has been. It's been a long time. But I did something when they still had the bracket busters. I kind of did some analysis to see, like, did that actually help people? And the answer was no. Right. In general, it was almost used as a way to eliminate. You know, you'd pit the two best against each other, and the team that would lose is like, well, tough. It's essentially what it amounted to. There were very few times where two good teams played each other, and regardless of the outcome, they both made it. It's been years and years, and I think the site that this is on is long gone from now. But it's interesting because you hear that stuff thrown out, and it's like, I think in some ways that potentially the motivation is good, but the net outcome is not really what you'd think it would be. But so a couple, I guess, IU related questions. First, I'm going to use the fact that they've played this home and home series with Kansas over the last couple of years, as an example. You know, there's all these different multi-team events. There's different neutral court games. There's all these things. There are not very many of these home and home, series that power conference teams are setting up with one another, outside of ones that are, you know, traditional rivalries. You talk about Iowa State, you know, they're going to play Iowa every year. And kind of alternate there and play on each other's home floor. But in general, that's not happening. I mean, what's your take on that? Is that just because of, you know, you mentioned some of the NIL opportunities of being able to play in some of these neutral sites? You know, is that a pendulum that you see shifting anytime soon to be able to have more of those games? I think, as a pure fan, those games are awesome. But it's also, I understand from the school's perspective, there may be a lot of reasons they don't want to do things like that.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that it's a tier structure thing again. Like for Indiana and Kansas, I think it's perfect. And it makes great sense because those programs are so established. And, you know, regardless of the roster or the team, you can feel good about that being a highly televised spotlight game. So we're going to see this year starting a series at Duke with Arizona and Duke. And then Duke will play their first true road non-conference game in years. In 2 years when they come to Arizona. But Arizona also did that with Alabama, who, you know, you can start to depend on as a program that's going to be there at the top. As long as Oates is there, you would imagine. And then, you know, so there's a few of those starting to brew, which is, I think is, I totally agree with you as a purist. I think we're all, you know, similar age group. And yeah, we all want to see that. I think for the rest of the teams, even top 25 level teams, top 50 level, it becomes a war of attrition in terms of going back to that 1 year at a time mentality. It's and I think part of the brutal part of the business is, you know, there's 360 something teams, right? Let's just say there's 360. If you look at the coaching carousel every year, 60 jobs turnover on average. This year we had 59. I think the year before we had 61. So 60 is a really good average to use. So that's basically one out of every six coaches in the country are going to change over next year. And that what that creates is, and that's a much higher number than it used to be in the past. What that creates is a lot of the home and home series is that you saw traditionally don't get returned because a new coach can come in and say, hey, I didn't sign up for this game. We're going to scrap the contract. And, you know, the school that started on the road is left kind of holding the bag and not getting that return game. Or we see a lot of things even at the top, like Auburn and Washington, for example. Washington played at Auburn in 2019. It took 4 years to get Auburn to come back and finally return it. You know, right now, not to call them out, but like Baylor's doing the same thing to Stanford. That Stanford played down there, I think, 3 years ago, and Baylor still hasn't come back to play Stanford. So there's just a lot of like finagling based on your your year coming up, your team coming back. Do you want to go play that game? If you don't really feel like playing it, there's usually some sort of angle or charade you can create to get out of it for a year, or you know, kick the can down the road. It's really unfortunate because it's created a lot of trust issues with scheduling. The other element of this, of course, is the net. So if you go play, you know, let's just go play Indiana and Arizona in Las Vegas, then it's, you know, it's a neutral game, probably a safer chance it's quad one instead of me needing you to be top 30 for a home game to be quad one, or top, you know, top 15 for a quad 1A. So I think all of that goes into play as well. St. Mary's down the street from me, they've mastered it. They played five neutral court games last year. Santa Clara did something similar. And I think that for those types of programs, it just makes more sense. You know, they, St. Mary's does get a good crowd every game, but you know, they don't mind going to some empty arena and taking on a team. And it works well for them. It works well for a lot of places. So
Rocco, going back to IU, or you could just say any power, but we'll say Indiana, and you're consulting them. If you're being asked to consult them, 11 non-conference games. You mentioned Iowa State kind of goes on the light end of that. Michigan State at times is an example of a team that, you know, sometimes Izzo goes, man, we overscheduled early and played so many tough games. How many games for a power conference out of those 11 should be, you know, those maybe toss-up games or really competitive games? And then is there a place for bye games in the college basketball? Or is there some middle ground which you would suggest, and on a consulting basis, to a school like Indiana?
Yeah, well, I think like the Michigan States and the Indianas right now, if you know, imagining that they're forecasted to be a top 15, top 20 program going into that year, you kind of schedule based on what you think you have and where you're going. Michigan State, Kansas, traditionally under Self and Izzo, they always have loaded schedules, but they also know if we load up our schedule and we go 5-4, or God forbid 4-5, we're fine. Like we're totally fine. Our team's going to get better by playing all those tough games. And in Big Ten, that's going to pay off down the road, or in Big 12, that's going to pay off. And they've done that consistently. You know, I think all three of us know the data on those two. Indiana could do the same thing if they chose. You know, I think even if you wanted to split them in half, if you have 11, you could do, you know, three games in a big event or two games in a big event, play three other really good games. Like Indiana has Kansas this year. I think they'll probably take on one other big game. Not sure when that's going to happen or who it's going to be. I know everybody's going to ask.
They've scheduled Auburn. Auburn came out last weekend.
Yes, in Atlanta. Yeah. And I'm actually helping those guys with a few more games down there. So they'll have their nice mix, but I think, you know, I talked to a Pac-12 team who's middle of the pack earlier today, and last year they bought seven bye games and, you know, didn't do anything for them. They only had a couple games that could move the needle. They didn't do well in those games. They played okay in the league and felt, you know, it was pretty clear by March they weren't getting in. So this year they're going all in. Instead of buying seven games, they're only going to buy four. They've got a good rivalry team they're going to play, and then they'll end up with you know, we're working on three different games where they can either do a home and home on two of them, and then one like maybe in Vegas. And so that's how the mentality can start to shift. Another team I can comment on, I think publicly is fine, is Clemson. You know, I think the three of us know last year they were 342nd in non-conference strength of schedule. If you ask us, we would have said no matter how far they go ACC tournament wise, they're probably not getting in with that. And that does something to a coach, because now Clemson's scheduling a lot harder this year. I don't have to share their games, but you'll be able to look at the comparison from last year to this year. So that's what fascinates me, is like these middle of the pack power conference teams, the pendulum can swing big time. You know, 'cause they're not at the top of the league picking which games they want. They're not Carolina. They're not Duke. Same thing happened last year with Wake Forest from the season prior, when they, I think, were 341 in non-conference.
Yeah.
All right, so we got a few listener questions here that I'll throw to you. None of them are specifically who is IU going to schedule, so you're off the hook on that.
Thanks.
So first one comes from Rick. He says, who has the final say on the schedule, the AD or the head coach?
It's pretty much the coach 97 to 98% of the time. I'd say the extreme exceptions is with rivals, you know. So like an example last year, BYU and Utah State, I think have played each other 24 straight years. And then they decided to publicly, it got kind of ugly in Utah between those two schools with BYU joining the Big 12 and then not playing in football. You know, there was a game lined up last year in basketball, all set, ready to go. And the AD came over the top, and I won't say which school, but they just decided not to play. So there's like one of your two percenters. But those are like the only times I see it. Like if a team's realigning from conference to conference, you know, like Jacksonville State this year, they're going from the A-Sun to the Conference USA. A-Sun teams won't play them anymore, even if they were, you know, had verbally agreed. So some of it comes from realignment. Others come from rivals. Everything else is coach driven, from my experience.
Okay. Andrew's question, any thoughts on a potential replacement for the ACC Big Ten Challenge from the Big Ten's perspective? Anything that you can see coming up to kind of replace that? I guess more from the standpoint of it being another conference versus conference type scenario, or does that really just free up Big Ten teams going forward to try to find another big game on their own without being forced into it?
I think it'd be smart to do it. I don't know. I haven't heard of anything for sure coming together, but I think the obvious partner would be the Big 12, you know, because the Big 12 does have a challenge with the Big East. But, you know, obviously the Big 12 like has been the number one league 7 of the last 8 years, maybe more than that. And, you know, the league's deeper now, so you can actually pair up more of the teams. You know, Big 10 sitting there, 14 teams. This year the Big 12 will have 14. In the future they'll have 12. So I think they would be interested in doing that because I think they really liked having that late January game in my conversations with some of the schools there. You know, Big 10 would have to be willing to do a late January game, I think, to make that interesting. But yeah, we'll see. That's just kind of my own perspective. I don't have any actual knowledge of conversations yet, but I just think that's the low hanging fruit. I don't see them really doing anything with the Pac-10 because I think obvious reasons, you've got USC and UCLA going over there, and that's probably not a bridge that's going to be formed.
No, probably not. Probably not. You know, the Big Ten's done the Gavitt games the last handful of years. That's always been odd because it's, you're not playing in it every year. Not all the teams are in it. Right. It never really, like, it makes for some decent games. Like the IU Xavier game last year was a great game, but the, as an event, really never has resonated, at least from my standpoint. And then last one here was from Brian, which I thought was an interesting one. And so it was, essentially, with the college football playoff schedule expanding, that takes another weekend in December that wasn't already spoken for from a football perspective. And typically, that third weekend in December has been a place where there have been some pretty high-quality non-conference basketball games that have been on. But if that weekend now becomes dominated by college football, you know, what are some things that college basketball might do to adjust, or have you heard any, you know, rumblings or early thoughts about what they might do or how that might impact a typically good weekend of college games?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to look to do more during the week, you know, because they can get those Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday slots. But yeah, I think, especially for the top of the sport games that we're used to seeing on those Saturdays, I would start looking towards the week, kind of like what we see around Thanksgiving or even the first week of the year. With Champions Classic, you know, those are Monday or Tuesday night games. And then all those great events around Thanksgiving are Monday through Wednesday, like, you know, Maui Classic's like the only thing on. So they would have to start figuring out a different strategy to play double, triple headers on some of those nights, probably around the holidays. And then maybe interesting places for people to go travel and see a game, right? Like maybe do some stuff in Chicago or big cities to capture some of that holiday attention, which they do, starting to do more anyway. They're doing that on the third Saturday now. I think this year, you know, I can't really share all the matchups yet, but December 16th in a variety of games with quality teams, there's 9 different cities hosting what we would consider neutral events, all the way from Southern California up to New York and everything in between. So So, yeah, so they're definitely capitalizing on it now. You're spot on. But I think you would just have to start spreading that out on the weeknights.
Coach, anything else you got here? I feel like we could probably talk to Rocco about this for a while, but trying to be somewhat respectful of his time and also not find ourselves winding up with a 2-hour show on a Thursday night. So
not really. Just thanks, Rocco, for coming on and explaining some of the things. As bracketologists, we know strength of schedule matters, and you have all of those things that you explained: coaches, pressure, money, finances. All of those things go into a schedule, and I've always been one, schedule smart, and you have a little better chance to get into the tournament. I think scheduling is very, very, very important to help your team be better on the court, but also when it comes down to what we do and what the NCAA committee does in the fall. And so I appreciate you coming on and sharing that.
Hey, my pleasure. Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think, the frustrating part about it is sometimes when a committee member comes on and says they didn't schedule hard enough, and I kind of know the team that he's talking about, and knowing that they tried and bend over backwards to get these games and just flat out couldn't get the games, it's tough. But I get it. Yeah, it's so crucial. And I think – I think with NIL, like I said, with my kind of wild idea of how to get better games down the stretch, I think there could be some opportunities within that in the future to do stuff later in the season. I think the key is, like we talked about from the top, the power leagues, finding enough motivation for them to do something in late January or early February would help move the needle at least a little bit. And you're right, Andy, like bracket buster idea, some of that's coming back actually. Like Mac and Sunbelt are doing a challenge this year where the second game is going to be early February. But you're right. Like even if they pit the two best teams in those leagues against each other, there's a good chance neither of them will be an at-large candidate by then. And if one of them is, it could just be a de facto knockout game. So we'll see. At least there's effort going on and that inspires me and whatever we can do to get better games across the sport, like that's exactly why I'm getting as involved as I am.
Well, Rocco, we appreciate you dropping by, talking to us tonight. It was a lot of fun. Good connecting with you again after a few week hiatus since our last Field in the 68. If anybody not following Rocco, you can find him at RoccoMiller8 on Twitter, and bracketeer.org. is the website. So certainly would encourage everybody a good follow for all things college basketball. And it was great catching up with you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Andy. Thanks, Brian. Really good to talk to you guys again.
All right. Well, that will take care of our scheduling conversation. And coming up here on Assembly Call Radio, we'll hit the mailbag for a handful of questions before we wrap things up tonight. So stick with us here on the Assembly Call.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. and their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
All right. Good stuff. Awesome stuff, Rocco. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. I'll check out the full episode later. Appreciate it, guys.
All righty. Take care. All right.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Yep. Stay in touch. Talk soon.
All right. We'll do.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, Coach. We'll hit a few questions. Yeah, lots of we didn't really get into. I mean, we touched a little bit on the bracketology implications of that, but yeah, really, really good stuff from him, and got a little bit more insight into what he does with the teams, which, like I said, I knew a little bit on the surface about, but definitely a lot of moving pieces to understand how you do that, and like I put in the chat for you, you were kind of reading my mind with the question about IU. I know we talk about that a lot of what's, you know, maybe the optimal way to do it, and I think the big, you know, big takeaways where it does really depend a lot. We've talked about that with even in Woodson's tenure, depends a lot about on what you need, what you know about your personnel. And the good thing about the way the scheduling works there is that it does offer you some flexibility to say, hey, if this team maybe isn't what I thought it was going to be because I had guys leave or different things like that, you've got some opportunity to pivot in certain scenarios. Obviously, sometimes you're locked into to some of these different events, but in general, it offers up a lot more flexibility than you might see in some other sports. So be interesting to see how IU fills out the rest of the schedule and then kind of gives you some context to put those decisions in when you see them after the fact.
Yeah. You know, and then you get beat by Indiana State and Purdue Fort Wayne.
And the whole damn plan's out the window. Right? It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like we're not scheduling Ball State with Lewis, you know, cause he did a good job there. And I get that, but you know, when you and I started watching Indiana basketball, there was Evansville, Ball State. Those games were on the schedule quite a bit. You know, and then, you know, I went back and looked at some of the games back in the archaic old days when I was in college, and you had Kansas State coming in. And, I mean, you really, you know, the schedules were full of teams now that would never, ever, you would never have 9, 10, 11 of those. You know, I was it the 81 team. If you go look at their schedule, other than the Indiana Classic, it was always like the schedule was tough, and then you had the Indiana Classic at Market Square Arena where you had the two games you were likely to win, and you had the Indiana Classic in Bloomington, so you had four games you could likely win, and then everything else was just loaded, and you had more games. You had like 9 other games that were – Notre Dame was on the schedule every year. Kentucky was on the schedule every year. Louisville quite a bit. I get all the stuff, but I want to tell coaches, you want to keep your job, win those games. Like, you're going to keep your job by playing North Dakota State of San Francisco. You ain't keeping your job if you do that anyway, and that's not getting you ready to beat the Illinois and the Michigans and all of that. You don't want to overschedule, but we've had far too much underscheduling at Indiana.
Opinion. I mean, you're also, to your point, you got to try to balance, and this is ultimately where there's, you know, some art, and there's some art to it as well. You're trying to balance the ability to win games with the ability to prepare yourself for what is to come over the course of the season. And I think sometimes that scale tips a little bit too far in the winning games category, and you set yourself up to be, well, crap, it's January, and this is the first true road game you played all season. Well, that's probably not going to go well. So you got to kind of figure out how to do some of that stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy to look back at some of those other schedules. And ultimately, at the root of it for me is just as an overall college basketball fan, not necessarily specific to IU, is that there's certain games that you want to see, and that's kind of why I asked the question about how do you get more games played in on-campus venues, understanding all the reasons that the schools would have not to do that. Like, those are awesome atmospheres. And how do you get more of that? That to me is what helps grow the sport. And it's not, you tune in to games on a Monday through Friday in November and there's like three good games the whole week. Like that doesn't do it. But too often, if you've got two good games on a given night in November, it's like, man, this is a pretty good slate. And it's it's really not when you got, you know, 90 games played and there's two of them that actually have probably some implication to something. So it's all trying to figure out the balance of that. But
and again, I try really hard not to be that old man and yell at everyone to get off my lawn too. But Notre Dame and UCLA used to play a home and home, a non-conference. Notre Dame used to play DePaul, Marquette. I mean, those were rivalry games that were fantastic to watch as a college basketball fan, even though I was an Indiana fan. Illinois, Missouri, they have that still going, I believe. Those kinds of games. And then again, like I said, I remember Ball State playing in Evansville all the time coming into Assembly Hall. Those are, you know, those games are long gone now, I think. But anyway.
Yep.
You ready for this 7-3? All right.
Well, let's hit. Yeah, we can probably hit.
I put some in there at the last second.
Most of the newer questions. Yeah, probably most of the newer ones. I think some of these others are holdovers.
The one a little get down bit. About the select eight players.
There's Chad's question. There's maybe one of the ones down the bottom I'll bump up and maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
Lisa quickly, is the last new question, I think, that we have from the.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's another one down below that maybe we'll hit as well. Some of these we might have touched on a little bit already. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Romeo Langford. What's the only thing better than hitting a game winner to beat Wisconsin? Celebrate it with friends afterwards. Join Jarrett, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on Assembly Call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
And welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with the coach, Brian Tonsoni, and now it is time for our mailbag. Most of these questions, as always, submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join over at assemblycall.com/community. All right. So, you know, coach, first question comes from Bruce. Why does IU guarantee a four-year scholarship when a player can transfer at any time? Seems like a one-sided commitment, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that? I think the thing that I would point out is that it really is a year-to-year scholarship, so it's not the four-year thing. Maybe that's what you're getting at, so sorry if I stepped on your toes.
They can stay at school for 4 years, but the athletic scholarship, I mean, the position on the basketball team is not guaranteed. Is that what you're saying?
That's my understanding, yes.
Yeah, so you're guaranteed.
I think IU's done some things with their, like, student-athlete bill of rights and different things like that. Right, but I think
it's the student-athlete bill of
rights. Scholarship itself is like a one-year renewable situation. And
Bruce, you ask a good question right now with NIL and the transfer portal where kids are transferring three or four times. I would have answered that in the past of, I think that's good for IU to commit because we want players to commit. But we're in an era of non-committing and good kids not committing for 4 years. So, to me, it changes a little bit. If it's going to be total free agency, then it's total free agency. There's good and bad parts to it, and I'm mostly for it. But I do think that's from an academic institution. I think that's good that if a kid wants to be at IU and comes in and isn't good enough to continue on basketball scholarship that IU guarantees, if that is in the correct wording. I haven't seen the Bill of Rights myself. I don't have a problem with that because of the commitment thing. But, man, it is a good question in this day and age, The loyalty that we all like and want seems to have vanished, and you just got to run with it, and it is the way it is. So, I don't see that going away because that would just look ugly if you took away that student Bill of Rights. But I wonder if the wording and the way it's operated will change over time.
Yeah, and I think the challenge for, you know, you've got coaches who are going to leave. I think there's a little bit of a certain level of hypocrisy on some of that where, you know, the coach is committed until they get a better offer at times. And I think depending upon the level of school, that maybe is understood. But I think there's that piece of it. And there's also, you know, if you think that coaches aren't out there running off guys who might want to stay but can't for whatever reason, then you're kind of kidding yourself on that front as well. So I don't know that it's all as you know, everything's probably not as above board as all we'd all like it to be. And but it is a good question for that. I'm not sure there's a great answer given the times and everything else that's going on.
You know, and the other side of that, Andy,
right.
is
oh, go ahead.
I think the coach has the right to say, hey, you know what, young man, you've been here 2 years. You're not doing the things we ask you to do, and I'm going to go a different direction. I know that's called running kids off or creaming. We had that, all that stuff. But, you know, you bring a kid in good graces, and he doesn't work hard and doesn't do anything. I think you got it. What is it called now? You have to have that honest conversation. We're not going to play you. You might want to go elsewhere. If this is going to be – like a pro situation where players can ask for money and do things, then you better come in. There's another side. The coach has to be able to say, we don't want you in the program anymore. You better go into the transfer portal because we want to go a different direction because it is the pressure that Rocco talked about. I want to win, and son, you ain't helping me win. It's tough. That's just tough news, and it hurts. But, you know, this is a two-way street, and I think it's only fair if players and coaches and all that have freedom to leave that the coach can say, I want to go a different direction.
Yep. Next question from Philip. Do you know how the Big Ten determines who each team will play twice during Big Ten play? Of course, Indiana always plays Purdue twice. How do they select the rest of the schedule? Put this question in here because I thought it was good. I have no idea is the answer. It doesn't appear to be a ton of rhyme or reason because it even feels like there are times when you might go 2 years in a row and only have a single play against somebody. So I don't even think that it's you played this team twice last year, so you definitely won't the following year. And it also doesn't seem to be in any way based on who from a standings perspective is expected to be good. That'd be really hard based on when they release it now because rosters are so in flux. So great question. No idea. There seems to not be any pattern year to year that I've been able to discern at this point. Scott, we touched on this a little bit. You know, Phil Dickinson to KU helps us as their starting lineup makes it harder for Mbako to grab a lead role. And given that he left Duke because Filipowski returned, maybe there's a corollary there. Coach, you think that's a reasonable line of thinking?
Yeah, I do. I think – obviously, we have to sell him on a better offense than what we've run in the past. But I think that a young man like that might be a one and done or at least two and done. And he wants to come in and be able to have the shots and the minutes. So I do think there could be a correlation where some of these schools, you know, St. John's got quite a bit of guys in. They're probably still looking for lead guys, so that could be a competition. Who else besides St. John's and Kansas? Louisville, right?
Yep.
I think he has a better chance of winning and making a name for himself at Indiana than going to Louisville. So there is something the young man doesn't see fit in the program or the offense or something, I do think those things, play a role.
Yep. From Craig, what's the newest news of UCLA and USC joining in 2024-2025? Their plans on having two divisions for basketball, number of conference games, change of venue for the Big Ten tournament. I'm not, you know, these are great questions. So this falls again under the, I don't know. I don't really see how you could play more conference games though. Given some of the scheduling things that we talked about before, really seems hard to fathom taking away, you know, additional bye games, because in order to get it to be balanced in terms of having both, you know, both, you got to add two. At that point, you get to 22 games. Doesn't leave you a whole lot on the other end, maybe nine to be able to schedule. Those, as we talked about before, have some revenue implications of being able to try to have, you know, more of those bye games and you know, just more home games in general. So I would be surprised if that happened. From a divisional perspective, that certainly seems like a good time to revisit some of that or try to figure out, you know, different, you know, pods of teams or things like that. But I've not heard anything other than some of the speculation that was out there when it first got announced. And then in terms of Big Ten tournament venue, you know, we saw this at times in the past. where they've tried to have it different places. They had it in DC. They had it at Madison Square Garden. That had, you know, implications on timing because of when the Big East has it. I guess I would be surprised if they didn't try to have it in LA at some point, just because of trying to capture that market. So I don't think anything has been said there definitively, but if you look at the track record of them trying to hold it in different venues in some of these other media markets that they have acquired by getting teams to join the league, it feels like they would at some point. But Coach, I don't know if you've heard anything different, have other thoughts about those things, but
I haven't heard anything different. I do think you'll see in Los Angeles or Vegas at some point the Big Ten tournament because of the yep. West Coast teams being added. Brian Toohey says that the rotation of Big Ten scheduling is on a four-year rotation since 1920 and that this year is the same double buys and everything as 2020. So that would make a lot of sense that they have some formula of who you play, and then they just make sure that you over a course of years have you know, traveled to and double played everyone somehow. So it seems there, according to Brian, there is a four-year rotation. You add UCLA and USC.
Well,
and that's
he's just become the head of our research department then.
Absolutely.
So congratulations on that, Brian.
But you look at extending that rotation now when you add USC and USC because of the number of teams you're going to have to play and the double buys change and the single games. Obviously, you're going to have two more single games home and away by adding UCLA and USC, so that rotation formula will have to change.
All right. So Lisa had a question here. You know, I think she said not the right question for this show, I think because we had, you know, framed it more on scheduling. But, you know, so her question was, is Woody and staff have IU's best of the best marketing team working closely with them to come up with sellable talking points and knock your socks off presentations for recruits and having people ready to be able to tweak those if maybe they aren't as effective as they hoped. I don't know what insight, if any, you have into that, Coach. I think that probably is something that if they're doing it right is a little bit different for every player because no different if you're in sales of any kind, which ultimately is what this is. You're trying to figure out what the needs of that given customer are. And in this case, the player is the customer. And I think they all want and need to hear different things, but I'm not sure, you know, kind of how they work those up and really how that's done. I'm not sure if you have any insight on that as well. I certainly hope from that standpoint that they do have the best of the best working on it, but you know, kind of how all those come together would be an interesting topic for somebody who really knows some of the behind the scenes inner workings of that stuff.
I have a good friend, Andrew Brown, who works in the Cuban Center, a young man who graduated 2 or 3 years ago, has been working at the Cuban Center. You know, they do the video stuff when you get a recruit, you know, 30 minutes after the recruit signs, they have a, you know, 45 second highlight stuff. He travels with the team. He was with TJD out in Los Angeles to get film. They do such a good job. So yeah, I would say I don't have direct knowledge of how that works, but I'm sure someone on IU staff goes to whoever, whether it's the Cuban Center or other people in charge of digital media and everything, and has presentations for when they come in, the pictures with the uniforms, stuff in their hotel room, flyers with their names on it that they do, you know, they have a young man on campus. They're doing the full court press and the marketing promos are with everyone. And it's probably up to the coaches kind of saying, what does this kid want to hear? And then the marketing team using their skills to put stuff together, and they can put stuff together. It's amazing. I talked to Andrew in the media room before a game, and the number of people they had cameras on and the types of cameras and the strategies that they had to collect as much film. And then all of a sudden, you know, a day or so later, I see the compilation of all that stuff. And so I think every school works really hard to put on the best promotion they can. And so, yeah, the presentations are probably some of the best IU can come up with as far as whatever the coaches know the player wants and those things. It'd be fun to see some of those, you know, after the fact of someone signs and,
yeah,
you know, you walk in the locker room and there's a projection of of Mbakwo in a IU uniform hitting a game-winning shot for the NCAA tournament or something like that. And with all the computer stuff, you better believe they're doing something of those types of things on these weekends.
Yep, absolutely. All right, last one comes from Jim. Says, who do we have on the current roster, including Xavier Johnson, who can fill a player leadership void? Obviously losing, you know, guys like Race and Trace and Miller Kopp from a year ago do leave a void there. I think you have to assume, and you guys have touched on this, I believe it was on the show last week, you know, about X getting the waiver. I think he becomes really the de facto leader of the team in that scenario. So maybe who's another guy, coach, that you can see really stepping up in more of a leadership role than what we've seen him with either at IU in previous years, if it's a returning player, or some one of the newcomers who maybe steps into a little bit of that role.
Well, on the court, I think it's Galloway, coach's kid, the way he plays, you know, carefree and hard and tough and lead by example. And I think Galloway's got a personality. You see him on some of his film clips hamming it up and doing things. I think he is the natural second to X. And then you cannot underestimate, as I talked about the young man coming in for a walkout, what the job Anthony Leal does on this team, accepting his role, getting very limited run on game nights, but the biggest cheerleader on the bench. You have to have bench energy. And I don't think a bench guy can be your prime leader, because you need your best player to be your hardest worker and your best players to be out there in that forefront. But there is a different type of leadership when it comes from a supporting role on the bench. And, you know, we all hope to maybe see Leo get a little more time on the court, but he is valuable in practice. He's valuable in the community, and he's valuable on that bench. And in that locker room, I imagine he is just a great person to have as a teammate. So that's a different type of leadership, but the main vocal, get in your face, timeouts, on the court during a dead ball, I think it's X and Galloway.
Yeah, I would agree. Galloway feels like, of the returning guys, the one whose role has been big enough in previous years, for one, but also just in general, the personality, as you said, he feels like the somewhat clear choice. And what you don't know is with some of the newcomers, who's really somebody who may have that, you know, leadership mentality that will surprise you or whatever else. But certainly of the returning guys, just looking predominantly at just the amount of things they've been through that they can call upon to help guys through different situations, Galloway feels like the clear answer. So,
all right. I gotta get out of here, folks. Thank you.
We'll do it. Thank you, Ryan, for this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you'd like to see us do the show live, you can join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music, and thanks to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logos. And thank you for listening. We'll be back to talk to you next Thursday or earlier if situations warrant. But until then,
take it from me, Jordan Halls. Keep your elbow in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
That's it. We're done. No more questions.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
Hey, the show's over. Here I come, Coach Tonsoni.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Good stuff.
I'm interested to see if Renew is a guy who can expand into that. I think hard to do given the role that he really had last year, but
right.
Be interested to see him as a sophomore if he becomes a little bit more vocal in that regard.
Yeah, and a major player too as a starter, probably somewhat of a go-to depending on where and who they get in the wing, a vital part, been through it one year already. I almost mentioned him, so I think that's a good call. Really, what do you got? Six guys coming back. You don't have a whole lot.
At least it's a possibility. Yeah, you don't have a lot. And I think that's a hard situation, especially given the transfers that they have and the roles that they're going to play, at least of who they have right now. I mean, that'd be a lot to expect that from a leadership standpoint. It's still a young guy, you know, coming in that way. Sparks is older, but in a reserve role. Like maybe he's that guy because he's passionate about playing for IU. You know, maybe he's somebody who does that. But I just think for the same reason you don't ask that a freshman a whole lot, it's you're in a new situation and a new team and trying to learn a whole lot. And some guys just don't feel comfortable exerting themselves in that way, in that scenario. And so I think, you know, it becomes hard for those guys. Not to say that none of them would do that, but or could do that. But I do think it's probably something that if you go into the season expecting a lot of that from them or being in a position to really have to lean on those guys for leadership, I think that's a tough ask.
Yeah, and one of the things that, you know, would be good to talk about again maybe over the summer too is with this transfer portal, not only do you want talent and stats and good film, one of the things you need is good fits. And with Walker and Sparks and some of these guys, do you have guys that can be led? You know, we talk about who are the leaders going to be, but do you have a mix of players that can be led by your leaders on the team? You can have great leaders, but if the rest 8-9 guys around them are resistant to what needs to be done and are trouble in the locker room, then the locker room is going to be a problem regardless of your good leadership. I've been around basketball long enough, 25 years, that there have been some teams that I've been involved with that had good leaders but didn't have good team chemistry because it was beyond the leader's control because of some of the misfits that were on the team. And I think that's where a Walker and a Sparks, who don't necessarily move the dial for a lot of us stat-wise and highlight show-wise, might be a reason the staff has gone to these guys. They want to be there. They want to be a part of a winning program. They want to help move IU. They can be led by your leaders too. I think that's a fascinating thing in roster construction.
Yep, absolutely. So, all right. Alrighty. Well, good show, Coach. Good stuff from Rocco, and
yep.
Hopefully some other good news trickles in between now and next Thursday, and give us something else to talk about.
We got to get our shows in since. What's that?
I said hopefully. You know, I said hopefully the scheduling thing was good as some of that starts to get there. But yeah, we're rapidly approaching the most difficult part of the off season is
right.
It's the dust settles on the roster and you got to figure that stuff out.
And at least you and I got our couple weeks off there at the end of May, early June. We got that in early, so now it's up to the other two to have to fill in.
That's
in that downtime.
Yep, that's for other people to figure out, right? So
that's right.
We'll make it work. So,
all righty.
All right. Well, good talking
to
you as
always. See you, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
All right. See ya.